the tabletop. Take away
game mechanics on display.
Three designers share the stage.
Pick a genre and we'll play
the tabletop. Take away.
Welcome back to the Tabletop Takeaway. I'm Ananda Gunaratna.
I'm Charlie McCarron.
And I'm Trevor Muller-Hagel.
And today we are going to talk about Alchemists, the third game in our worker placement series. So in Alchemists, you are an academic type, right? You're an alchemist at a magical university, and just like a real university, it is publish or perish. So as a magical alchemist, you are studying potion ingredients. Basically, there's eight different ingredients, and you're trying to find out the hidden alchemical nature of each one as represented by three little bubbles with pluses or minuses in them. So there are eight such collections of little bubbles, and you're trying to figure out which one corresponds to each ingredient. I won't go too in detail in how that works mechanically, because it's kind of complicated, but basically each ingredient hides a secret, and you're trying to find that secret by doing a bunch of science. So in the game, your ultimate objective is to publish theories about the nature of each of the eight ingredients. And in order to do that, you have to gather the ingredients and then brew them into potions, which you can test. And there's generally three different ways to test the potions. You can either drink it yourself, which if it turns out to be a negative potion, like a potion of paralysis or a potion of weakness or maybe it's poison, or a potion of insanity, that's going to have some bad effects on you. So maybe you don't want to do that. So instead, you can feed it to a grad student who will drink the potion for you. But if it's a negative effect, then they will start charging for their potion drinking services in the future. Or you can also sell the potion to an adventurer who is looking to buy certain potions for their adventures. But if you do that and you sell them the wrong potion, there may be consequences. So you use this to gather information, and you use that information to make deductions about the nature of the ingredients. In that respect, this is a logical induction game. There are truths you're trying to figure out from evidence. And then once you think you know the truth, or you just really want to publish something because the game really pushes you to publish, you can go and publish a theory. And you put a seal on it, which represents how sure you are about your theory. And other players can come and debunk your theory if they think you're wrong. Or they can assume that you're right and try to use that in their own deductions. But obviously, that's kind of risky. Now, the worker placement aspect of this game is that each round, you are going to assign your workers to the different spaces on the board to take different actions, such as gather ingredients or test out potions on grad students, or publish theories, or buy artifacts, or transmute ingredients into gold. There's a bunch of different spaces. But unlike the previous two games that we've talked about, this game is structured more like, like Bus, which we've played before, where you have a phase where everyone assigns all their cubes, and then you go and resolve each action once the cubes are assigned, as opposed to... just playing a worker on your turn in a sort of rolling worker assignment. So structurally, it's a little bit different in that way. We can talk more about the details as they come up, but that is basically Alchemists. You get to be a professor, you get to do science, you get to publish theories which may or may not be correct, and
Yeah, it's fun. It's hard to wrap your head around a little bit of the induction deduction but I thought it was kind of fun how we are learning all this stuff together even though we're competing, and every piece that we unlock, like, so say someone debunks something, then that's a piece of information for everybody. I liked how that worked. Yeah,
I really enjoyed the kind of push and pull of the turn order system, and how, like, if you chose to go in the bottom, you'd get the best benefits, but then you'd be the and then you'd be the first person to place everything, but then the highest person in the turn order actually gets to see where everyone else placed first.
Yeah.
And then choose kind of who they go over and can then...
Yeah, to elaborate a little bit, there's
it's a wild system.
There's a turn order track, and at the beginning of the round you place a token somewhere on the track, and some of the spaces have different rewards. And basically, the further down you go on the track, the better the rewards are. So you can go first and get fewer rewards, or go later and get more rewards. And when I say go later, I mean resolve your stuff later, because you actually have to assign your workers first. Workers don't block spaces in this game. Instead, they're in many of the actions, going earlier before your opponent is very beneficial. So players who are later on the turn order have two disadvantages. One, everyone else knows where they're going. And two, if somebody else goes to the same space, that player will go before them.
So would you say that the turn order track is also kind of worker placement? It feels like
kind
it, because you're choosing which reward to
you're
get.
Getting resources and things like that. Obviously, you place a worker. But it's not really a worker, though. Everyone has the same... I guess we all have the same number of workers every time, too.
Yeah. I've seen this style of turn order track in some other games, like The Wizard Always Wins. I mean, there's something a little bit...
has it, too.
Yeah. And there's something a little bit like it in King Domino. I think, actually, if... So, when it comes to turn order, I like this style, this framing of the turn order bid better than paying resources. Like, for example, you know, in the Great Zimbabwe, turn order is hugely important there, and you bid resources to go first, which you are losing. In this game, turn order is very important, and you are kind of bidding to go first because you've got the opportunity cost of not getting better rewards, but it's framed as you getting something, as opposed to you paying for the privilege of going first, which I think makes it easier for players to understand. Because otherwise it's like, well, I don't understand how good going first is, so I just shouldn't bid anything, right?
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's really interesting, like, being able to also kind of control it every round. You don't have to worry about having those resources, like you're saying, and like, how will that affect me in the future? It's more of an immediate, oh, if I go first, that means I'll for sure really get what I want that round. If I'm really like, oh, I really want to debunk this person's theory, or I really want to get this theory because everyone knows what it is now, so I want to make sure I go first. It really makes sense to kind of have more control over that.
Yeah, and to bring up viticulture again, that system of not only for the turn order selection, you get a thing, but also usually on most spaces on the board, the player who's there first gets a bonus. So it's not as much blocking the entire action space, but you get like an extra coin or something if you're there first. So I think probably a lot of games do that, but like you're saying, Ananda, it's guiding players in like, oh, okay, I know this would be good immediately because I get this small bonus, even if I don't quite understand what the action does yet. Maybe.
Yeah. Then. I also like that it makes sure that going first is quite valuable for multiple reasons, right? Like the way that it inverts the order of placement sort of reinforces the value of going first. This is, you know, I think about this mostly with splatter games because splatter games also make a big deal about going first. It's like, I don't know, I think about it as like the splatter principle, right? If you're going to have, if turn order is important, rather than trying to compensate for turn order by like giving players a few extra, and sort of trying to reduce the impact of turn order, you just turn it up, make turn order even more impactful, and then have players compete over it in the game. I think that's good because it removes the issue of going first being slightly better, but not better enough to, you know, to make people pay for it.
So something that's maybe unique to this game as a worker placement game, like something that I think a lot of worker placement games do well, is that there's no phases or there's no rounds or anything. You're just playing until you need to take your workers back. But that might be off sync from other people, and there's like some interest in how that works. But I think it's cool for this one how there are the rounds. Like there's very specific round structure of like many different action. Even the actions you're taking are in a certain order, which for this game is important.
Yeah.
Versus like other worker placement games, it's very free form. Like I'll do this action now. I'll do this action now. But it's kind of like we've talked about before where it's like, ooh, I'll do this now and I hope it pays off. Because there's sometimes when it's like, oh, information has changed. I hope that I can publish the right thing later on in the round.
Yeah.
But you're committed.
Yeah. It reminds me a little bit of bus in the sense that, you know, you place down your workers, but things may change before you resolve them and change what you want to do with them. I mean, I think bus does even more of that, but this game definitely has a little bit of that. Yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of bus, we in the first episode of Worker Placement, I had said like, well, I don't know, what's the first worker placement game? We weren't really sure. There was one called Keydom in 1998 is possibly the one. Kalis 2005 that popularized it. But the bus got a mention because 1999. So yeah. Check out that episode too, by the way.
Yeah.
Almost all the games we've talked about here, we've covered on the show at some point.
So, okay. So here's a question. So, you know, we've talked a little bit about how this game has a different structure mm-hmm. than the other two games that we played, where, you know, you have very well-defined rounds and you set things up and then you execute as opposed to just sort of a rolling assignment. What do you think are the advantages and disadvantages of, like, a planning phase as opposed to just act as you go?
Well, like we were talking about with the turn order and all that, it allows you to have more creativity with how you go about those things. Also, being able to place all of your workers all at once is very interesting. I feel like you get a lot more interaction with your workers for fewer of them, maybe. So yeah, I think more of them can do more things. And then, yeah, you can actually really plan out the span of time as one chunk of actions as opposed to just needling one thing at a time and hoping for the best. I think there's a lot of good stuff for using round structures.
Yeah, I think for me, sometimes I think about it in terms of on a player's turn action points too, because there's like part of me that likes having the elegance of, oh, you do one thing on your turn, then it's the next player, then next player, next player. And there's a lot of tension there. But the problem is sometimes you have this plan and you do one thing. And then by the time it goes all the way around, you're like, wait, what was my plan again? And it's kind of unsatisfying sometimes if you can't do at least two actions because you can't like chain a couple things together. So this one, at least, you know, yeah, you can like... It feels more powerful than if we were going one by one. And you'd maybe have to reassess every time. So it might actually take longer to do.
Well, right, yeah. You can set up everything you want to do in the round. And then even if things change in the meantime, you still kind of need to stick with your plan because your workers are already placed.
Yeah. You can just go get a snack. Well, people are thinking.
So in this game, there was a lot of AP.
Because there's a lot of deduction in addition to action selection.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. During the round, you might get some more information. But right. It's cool, yeah. Though, I think.
And I think it's kind of nice because, you know, yes, there is a lot of AP. But when other people are trying to figure out what they want to do, you can use that time to try to make deductions
right.
on your sheet about, you know, what things are what the alchemicals could be. So
yeah.
It's not all bad. But there is a lot of AP in this game.
There's also a weird aspect of bluffing in it.
Yeah,
which I didn't really expect that to be in there. Like, oh yeah, this is for sure what I think this alchemical is. And you could have no clue, like Ananda, for at least two or three of them.
My first two theories that I published, I had basically no clue. I'd eliminated some possibilities, but like I did not know most of the symbols on them. But I published them anyway. I hedged, and then I went and debunked my own theory later, and I published replacements, and it worked pretty well. That was great.
Yeah, you know what, Trevor? I'm going to make that my takeaway, because I think it's cool. Like, this game could have been just a very straightforward figure out, like, test two things, use that pyramid of like discovery and figure out, like, very dry. Could have been a shorter game, maybe more approachable, but what I think is cool about it, it like gets a lot of different game nuances, like bluffing. Mm-hmm. Like I did not think we were going to be doing a little bit of that, which I assume would make repeat plays even more fun once we all understand and we can see like what's going on. And then it has like these other worker placement risky bets you can make on things, and yeah, it's got a lot.
I absolutely agree, and I think that's one thing that really sets it apart from most other logical induction games, which is because the game pushes you really hard to publish early. Because like, if you publish early, you get grants. If you publish early, you get points passively every round for having published the most stuff.
Yep.
There are conference events that come out periodically where you get punished if you haven't published enough. So it's really pushing that, and it really does make you make a guess before you're certain. And that, you know, that's something I feel like most induction games don't do. Most of them, it's like, okay, you need to solve the thing, because if you guess before you've solved the thing, it's going to be bad, and there's going to be some penalty. And there is a penalty in this game, but there's also rewards just for guessing, even if you guess wrong.
Yeah.
And that is a very unique experience for a logical induction game.
Yeah, and the ability to debunk someone is fascinating too, because it's like an attack, but it's more just like,
but not a take that attack.
I think you just didn't get this right, so let's see what happens, and then you get even more information. Everybody does,
Well, and it's also really cool because the way that we were playing the apprentice variant, in the master variant, debunking is slightly more complicated, but when you're debunking, you basically have to say, okay, I think you're wrong about this part of the alchemical. You're not saying anything about the rest of the alchemical. You're just saying, I'm debunking you because I think this part of your theory is wrong. And if the player hedged on that part of the theory, they don't lose any points. So, it's very cool. It's very thematic. I think this game captures academia as a theme extremely well. Like, you know, the pressure to publish, the exploitation of grad students.
I was just going to say that.
The constant shortage of funds.
Testing on yourself and doing cartwheels in the quad.
I think this might be the most accurate representation of academia I've seen in a game.
And it's
drinking
all about alchemists.
Questionable fluids.
Yeah.
Selling things to people and you don't actually know if it'll work or not.
Yeah. Okay. I think my takeaway involves the adventurer system. So there are adventurers who come and who want certain potions, and you can sell potions to them for quite a lot of money compared to the other ways you get money in the game. Like you can earn up to 5 coins depending on your current reputation and the guarantee. So like when you sell a potion, you give a guarantee of its quality. So you say either, you know, this is going to be exactly what you want. You want a potion of strength. This is a potion of strength. Or you can guarantee that, okay, it's probably a potion of strength. It might not be, but it's at the very least something with a positive effect. Or you can guarantee, okay, well, it's at least not going to be the opposite of what you want. At worst, it'll just be useless soup. Or you can just guarantee, okay, this is just going to be a potion.
This is just liquid, you know, in a vial.
Take it at your own risk. Which all get different prices. But the really cool thing about it is a mechanic for learning information, which, you know, logical induction games, there's always some way to learn information. But it's one where you also get something else, right? You're getting money depending on if you at least met your your guarantee. And I think that's really cool because it's like it's the intersection of two different games. You've got the gold, the resources minigame where you want to get gold, and you've also got the deduction game, and it gives you a way to get a bunch of gold while also getting information, but in a way that's riskier than just testing the potion on a student or yourself, or transmuting ingredients into gold. Because you can transmute ingredients into gold, but it's only one ingredient for one gold, as opposed to like potentially two ingredients for five gold. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think my takeaway is in induction games, assuming you have some other sub game, it's really fun to have like a high risk, high reward action that ties two sub games together, the induction game and some other sub game. That is very exciting for the players because, you know, it feels efficient.
Yeah. I remember reading a Richard Garfield book about risk-reward, and he said, like, every game should have a choice between do I want to be risky or not? Like, maybe every decision you make could have a little bit of that. Like, do I want to... And... for different types of players, enjoy that, but also just like different times. Like in this game, well, I'm not quite sure. I'll play it safe on this aspect.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess. So, okay. So, one other aspect of the potion, the various potion identification subgames, which is interesting to me, is at various times I have wanted to make a game involving potions, because you know, since I played NetHack and Dungeon Crawl back in the day, those are roguelikes, and one of the mechanics in those is you pick up potions and they are unidentified, and part of the game is figuring out what they do. I guess more in NetHack than in Dungeon Crawl, but and that seems like a fun challenge, right? Figuring out what things do. And it's hard to model in a board game because basically if you mix the two things, then you have to get a potion and then there has to be something that tells you what the potion does, and you have to track like, oh, the red bubbly potion does this. But in Alchemists, it kind of solves this issue by combining the potion creation or acquisition, I guess, and the identification in some context, right? Like in every context where you're creating a potion in this game, you're immediately using it for something, and that's part of the identification process. And then you don't have to track it as a separate card.
And I guess, did you say this, but the way this works is through a phone app?
Yes, it uses a phone app.
Yeah, because otherwise, you know, at first I was like, couldn't remember, was it like some Turing machine type
logical setup puzzle?
But yeah.
Yeah, so just to tie into Ananda's takeaway for myself as well, it's not necessarily just the adventures, though. I really want to pull in the idea that throughout the game, the state changes and you get access to new things over time. And I think it's really good to have some kind of cycle to the game for like a worker placement game. You know, new spots open up, new opportunities happen. You know, we had multiple different things where the rules just shifted just a little bit. You know, it's like, okay, at the end of this round, it's going to be that, you know, you want to make sure you have as many things out on the board or you will lose points. You'll lose reputation. You'll need to endorse. You'll need to actually publish papers, etc. I think that's really cool because it kind of can change your strategy. It's like, oh, I do need to work on that. I don't have anything out there like I did. And it's just really fun to see that kind of shift. And then at the very end, we even had a new like category where you're not drinking them anymore. You're submitting them to this exhibition. And, you know, if you're the first person to do so for multiples of them, then you get extra points. It's just really cool seeing that shift. And like the adventurers, you don't start off with either. Those get introduced in the second round. So like just having this kind of evolving state of the board for a worker placement game, I think is really nice. Games like Agricola, like they do have slowly but surely things become unlocked, but it doesn't really feel like a shift of the state. It doesn't feel like a shift of what you're trying to go for. And so I think that's really nice to have.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is also an advantage of the format, the format round. Having rounds and having a planning phase and then the execution phase, because it's quite easy to make changes to what's on the board in between rounds.
Exactly. Yeah. Though I do really like the roundless system too. I think that flows really nicely. But I do think this is a good benefit of the round system.
Yeah. And again, I'm sure I mentioned this in the Architects of the West Kingdom episode 2, but the fact that the board tells you, not so much in this game, like there's a lot of hidden rules, whereas Architects of the West Kingdom, you could tell exactly what you got from every spot. But it still makes it more approachable because there's like a picture of a weird looking person on every spot, and you start to get the character of like, okay,
right,
this is what this region does. Even if I like, there's no words telling you what the action is, but you just kind of look at the picture and can understand somewhat about what's going on. Like, oh, there's that grad student, okay, boom.
Make him drink this.
Yeah, like poor the guy. Illustration itself can help.
Yeah, the humor is quite good too.
Yeah,
in this game.
All right. Well, I think that wraps it up for Alchemists. And tune in next time for our wrap-up episode on worker placement.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Tabletop Takeaway. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. So please tell your friends and visit our website at thetabletoptakeaway.com, where you can suggest games and mechanics for us to cover next on the show.